scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, it looks corner to Aguilar. Aguilar left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguilar. Three rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
All right, how we doing? Let's get after it. It is a Wednesday, January 22nd, and we are underway this hour on Flames Talk from our Groundworks downtown studio. It's Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. Hopefully you're having a wonderful week so far. Hello, Wes.
How are you, buddy?
I'm good, man.
Big day here. You missed all the excitement. I got a new Wi-Fi password.
Oh, congratulations. I'm really happy for it. I know it wasn't as simple as that, though. I know it took way too much effort.
Well, so I just had to bully Cam into giving me his because I don't have one.
You don't have one. Let's be honest here. You're day-to-day.
At best.
Yeah, you're day-to-day. Yeah. This hour, we'll see if you can get the podcast order right, and then we'll see if you can work tomorrow. Where do you find us?
Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, and wherever you get your podcast.
Woo!
Yeah, we'd love for you to subscribe.
That's a big day. This is a big day. I didn't make Shan smile. He hasn't smiled all week. So I think as we get this hour going, and you know, the Flames haven't played yet this week. They won't play until Thursday when they do another one-off home game against Buffalo. I think it's fair to say right now, Flames are in the driver's seat for a playoff spot. And I know that for some, that is awesome news, and for some, that is frustrating news, because I know there remains a lot of discourse about the direction of this team, so on and so forth. But, you know, you take a look at where things are in the standings. Well, obviously, they're in the driver's seat. But then on top of that, with what Vancouver did on Tuesday night, 2-1 lead after 40, lost to a dreadful Buffalo team 3-2 in regulation on home ice, and there doesn't seem to be any quieting of the noise in Vancouver. With where the Flames are, the way they've played, the way they've been able to bounce back time and time again when even some of us thought that maybe they were starting to come way back down to earth and it was going to go awry. That in and of itself, the fact the Flames are now, I did the math, 54.9% through their season. The fact that they're into the second half, into the third quarter, and still sitting in a playoff spot. I think that's something to celebrate a little bit. Or maybe celebrate's the wrong word because they haven't accomplished anything yet. But I think that that in and of itself is a bit of an accomplishment, that they're sitting here in a playoff spot on January 22nd. And they've been able to generally hold down a playoff spot for most of this season. And I think it's safe to say now in the second half of the season, they really do control their path to getting there. And now we see whether or not they're going to be able to follow that through.
Yeah, certainly what they've accomplished so far is kind of quieting the critics. Like, no matter what happens from this point forward, you're probably not going to be able to say, I told you so, about a Flames team that, forget competing for a playoff spot, so many people were picking these guys to be, you know, bringing up the rear or darn close to it in the Pacific Division. And so, you know, I go back to a comment that Ryan Lomberg made, and it might have been right before Christmas. I'm trying to remember exactly when it was, but about, you know, once you've put yourself in that conversation and you've remained in that conversation for enough of the season, you can't really look at it as a surprise anymore. And I think that's what the Calgary Flames have accomplished at this point, is that they've proven they belong in that mix. I don't know. If you gave me $100 today and said I had to bet on playoffs or no playoffs, I honestly don't know, you know, which part of the roulette table I'd be putting that money on. I don't know what the future necessarily holds for this Flames team, and yet 45 games in and still sitting in that
54.9%.
Yeah, sitting in that last wild card spot, you have to give them a ton of credit.
So I'm just going to go check the latest updated odds over at Money Puck.
Yeah.
53.7% is where they sit via those.
So not quite a coin flip, but not that far off.
Significantly higher than St. Louis at 31.9%, Utah at 23.8%, and Vancouver's dropped all the way down to 20.9%.
Wow.
To make the playoffs with the mess that continues to go on there. And I thought from a Flame standpoint, we'll touch on Vancouver maybe a little bit later on this hour because they do impact what's going to happen with the Flames in some form or another. But want to take you back to Tuesday at the poker tournament. By the way, incredible announcement from earlier on this Wednesday that the Flames Foundation and the 18th annual Calgary Flames Ambassadors Celebrity Poker Tournament raising a record $610,000 for the Flames Foundation. We were there. It was sold out. There was a waiting list. There were 430 players. That Deerfoot Inn and Casino was absolutely rammed. And it did not surprise me to see them haul in a record amount, but at the same time, $610,000 in one room in one day, that's some pretty incredible work. So just wanted to say salute to Absolutely. Everybody involved with the poker tournament, and that's awesome for the Flames Foundation.
Yeah, to Candace and her whole crew, and I know, you know, if she was sitting here with us, she'd like us to list about 100 people on staff and with the alumni and the ambassadors that contribute to that, but for an event that's been a powerhouse for the Flames Foundation to be setting a record,
yep.
That it really speaks volumes, does it not?
No, it's unbelievable. And just some more incredible work by the community for getting on board.
And some pretty solid content on the podcast.
Yeah. Well, this was, we sat down with Ryan Huska exclusively, Jacob Pelche, Jonathan Huberdeau, Dustin Wolf. And this man, Mackenzie Weegar, joined us for about 15 minutes and I thought it was a great chat. And I just, it's not like we haven't heard these things before from Mackenzie, but every time you hear him say it, you can just, you get a sense as to how much these things mean about, hey, the vibe, the feel, the overall thought inside that locker room and why this year has been just a whole lot more pleasant and fun when it comes to the Flames.
There's guys that want to be here now, and I think that says a lot, and that goes a long way, especially in the dress room. And then you got a lot of young kids that have come up and that have been great, you know, for the older guys, you know, they keep us loose and light. And, I think it's meshing well in the room. We're super competitive. Husk has, you know, he's been great with a great game plan every night. But, you talk about expectations and whatnot, and I've said this a lot, is we know what kind of team we are. We have an identity now, and we have a strong culture in the dressing room. And I know it sounds cliche, but we really do this year. In the years past, you kind of say it, but it didn't have much meaning behind it. But this year, you know, even talking to us, I'm sure a lot of guys are in better spirits. They want to talk. You know, we're playing well. So I think for me, it's night and day, and especially when you're comfortable in a city now with guys that want to be here.
So that was Mackenzie Weegar with us on Tuesday, and look, they're sitting in a playoff spot going into Thursday's game against Buffalo for a lot of different reasons. Dustin Wolf's been a massive part of it. Jonathan Huberdeau's turnaround's been a massive part of it. A blue line that has stepped up more than a lot of people would have expected. You know, Matt Coronato's emergence, so on and so forth. There's a lot of different reasons why the Flames are where they are. But I don't think you can overstate that the feel right from the get-go and kind of the motivation and the overall kind of vibe inside that dressing room right from the get-go. And I think that we all noticed it as soon as training camp began. I don't think that that's irrelevant. And I think that it has played some part in them being where they are at more than midway through the season. And as we move towards this Four Nations break.
When you and I chatted with Ryan Huska yesterday, he alluded to it as well. He mentioned the sort of chaos in Vancouver, and the way he phrased it was, we know what that's like because we've been through it. We know what it's like when, and now I'm really paraphrasing, but what Ryan Huska was referring to is, they know what it's like when a game ends and the questions aren't necessarily about the game. They're about where does this guy want to be or how does this guy fit the future plans. They know what a distraction that can be. They know what it's like in the room when you're maybe wondering if every guy is rowing in the the same direction. And so to go back to that clip from Mackenzie Weegar, it essentially underscores the value of the opposite of that feeling, right? There's a sense that the core nucleus of guys who started this season in Calgary are not only finishing this season in Calgary, but are going to be a part of it for a substantial amount of time moving forward, right? Like we're talking about veterans who, you know, those core guys are mostly locked up long-term in Weegar and Huberdeau and Kadri, obviously Rasmus Anderson going into the final year of his current deal. Next year is one of the exceptions, but you've got veteran pieces that are locked up, and then you've got kids who you expect to be a part of it for a long time. And if you're the Vancouver Canucks or you're a Canucks fan listening, the Flames of last year are kind of a cautionary tale, right? Of just how hard it is to skate through all that muck. How hard it is to, you say all the right things. Hey, we're professionals and we get paid to play and we're going to go out there and it's all we're thinking about, but it's a lot easier said than done.
So where are you on them being in the driver's seat? Because they're feeling like I think they're feeling pretty good about things right now. They seem to be a pretty loose group, and something about the way this season's going in Vancouver, nothing about the Blues gives me a ton of confidence that they're just going to go on this run that is going to see them overpass a bunch of teams, overtake a bunch of teams rather. Same is true with Utah. I don't know. I mean, the fact that Calgary is ahead just on points, like the fact that they've got the standings edge, is a big enough thing for me to suggest that they're very much in the driver's seat. And also the way they have played. I mean, there's probably been four or five different times when you've come away from a stretch of games that Calgary's played and been like, oh boy, is this the beginning of the end? Like, great start or a really nice story through the first third of the season. But yeah, this is probably when they start to drop off and come back down to earth a little bit. And it hasn't happened yet. Mm-hmm. This is still the situation that we're talking about, that they keep finding ways to bounce back, keep finding ways to get things back on track.
I don't want to punt on the question, but I think I'm sort of hesitant to put anyone in the driver's seat in this race until we get to that Four Nations break. For the reasons you outlined, yes, the Calgary Flames currently have a 1 point advantage over the Canucks and the Blues. Yes, they have games in hand on both of those teams. Yes, they've got a slightly larger cushion on Utah. And so I guess if you had to say somebody is driving right now, it's the Flames. And yet I do think this 10-game stretch and a huge advantage for the Flames to be home for seven of those. But I think this 10-game stretch is probably going to determine the answer to your question, because while you like the fact that they're currently sitting in that spot, you like the games in hand, you know, you are a little bit worried that the play was slanted fairly heavily against them in large stretches of their last three games.
Yep.
Right. They lose back to back in St. Louis. And, you know, I'm with you. I don't think the Blues are a wagon by any stretch, and yet they were the better team for that two game set against the Flames on St. Louis's home ice. And then you go into Winnipeg and, hey, you know, we're coming off the poker tournament yesterday. So Dustin Wolf, he was your ace up the sleeve. Like, he stole you a game. And you and I talked earlier in the week, you don't apologize when your goalie steals you a game. It's a huge part of your roster. So good on him. And yet for me to sit here today and say, okay, well, they're 1 point up. They've been outplayed in their last three. They're in the driver's seat. I'm not quite there. And I don't say that as a knock on the Flames, but I need to see what we're talking about 3 weeks from now to really answer your question.
And I think that's fair. You know, I asked Blake Coleman a similar question earlier at practice on Wednesday, and he said it's probably a little early to be looking at the standings quite like that. Mm-hmm. But
it's a great answer.
he is kind of, at the same time, he's got his eyes on that Four Nations break as well. This was Blake Coleman on Wednesday after practice.
We want to go into this Four Nations break with as much separation as we can get. So we've got, you know, 7 home games and there's maybe 3 road games coming up. And, you know, we've got a lot of good teams coming, but it's a good opportunity for us to try to put some separation in the standings. I think, you know, obviously the way hockey is and the parity in this league, it's going to be a dogfight all the way down the stretch, you know, whether it's for seeding or just getting into the playoffs. So there's never going to be a time to relax, but knowing that we have this 10 games and then a little bit of time to reset allows us to kind of put the gas down a little bit.
And if I can just add one thing to this, I do think the longer that the Flames, and we just heard from Blake Coleman today after practice, the longer the Flames remain in that best perch in the wild card spot, like, I think they become more dangerous the longer they're hanging around, because everyone has expected, as you said earlier, them to fall off. I think, like, right now, I don't see so much a driver's seat as one of those old trucks with the bench and about 4 people trying to sit in the front. But the longer the Flames are at the steering wheel, the more dangerous they become, because I do feel belief building. We sat with Dustin Wolf at the poker tournament yesterday, and he said, we believe we're getting into the playoffs. We fully believe. And that's not bluster, I don't think. Like, you and I walk in that locker room every day when they're at home and we hear the same thing. And I think that belief is genuine. Do the other horses in this race have more natural talent? Yeah, they do, right? The Vancouver Canucks, if they can get everyone on the same page, have more skill. Like, if you're just betting on the best group on paper, it's probably the Canucks. I think the St. Louis Blues probably have a little more upper echelon skill than the Calgary Flames as well. And yet, the longer this team that was supposed to fade away weeks and months ago hangs on, I think the more dangerous they become.
Well, and you know me, I'm not a big comparisons person, and I really do think each season is a completely different animal than other ones. But, you know, there's been the one that I never, ever compared to, and probably never will, is the 03-04 season. That's just that I don't compare seasons to that. But if you compare this to 10 years ago, very different how they're going about their business. But the Flames essentially protected a playoff spot in 2014-15 the entire time. And we all just expected, if you remember that year, it was Los Angeles at the time, defending Stanley Cup champion. And we all just kind of expected the Flames to drop off because what they were doing was unsustainable. Mm-hmm. And they were getting
that
routinely
was the buzzword
outshot
in Calgary. Unsustainable.
Sure was. That was the first time the analytics debate really kind of popped up in a big way in this market anyway, because the Flames were not doing what the analytics said they should, and it had people arguing on both sides. Well, this means analytics mean nothing, and this, well, no, because analytics mean everything, it means this is going to have a blah, 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 blah. But the Flames never did fall back, because you can never truly predict what's going to happen. You can make educated bets and you can say there's a good chance that this happens if this doesn't change, so on and so forth. And Los Angeles never truly figured it out. They were the opposite. The analytics loved the Kings that year. They outshot and out. They Daryl Suttered everybody that year, but couldn't score.
Yeah.
And they could not find ways to get that extra goal. And they were losing games 3-1 on empty netters night in and night out. And they never figured it out. Now, things are completely different this year. I'm not suggesting the Flames are winning games the same way. I'm not suggesting that they are rope-a-doping every single night to get to their wins. So the actual script is a little bit different. But why I think the comparison matters is that I think a lot of people have been looking at Vancouver all year and saying, yeah, well, you know what? They're just going to figure it out. The Canucks are the defending division champs. They went to game 7 in round 2. Like, this Canucks team's going to figure it out. They lost out to the team that ended up going to game 7 of the Cup Finals, so on and so forth. They're going to figure it out. And I'm not suggesting they will or won't. But that year, LA never did with the same type of feel, and the Flames never truly did fall completely back, despite everybody thinking they would. And that year, there was an 8-game losing skid that almost turned into 9 just before Christmas, and didn't. And this year, it hasn't been things quite that dramatic, but they still haven't fallen completely out of this thing, and they still are in a playoff spot.
Yeah, and
I think there's like a mental. I think there's a mental rub off on both sides as that continues.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I wonder how the mental part of it works for the remainder of the season. And let me flesh that out. What I mean is that Flames team in 14-15, they never relinquished that underdog mentality. Like they were treated like a team that had no business being in a playoff spot right up until March, right? Like we just kept waiting and waiting, and hey, you can't win with all these stretch passes, and you can't win with Chris Russell needing to block 10 shots a night, and you can't win with the goaltending tandem of Kari Ramo and Jonas Hiller. Do I have that right? It was those two that year, was it not?
Sure was. Yeah. Little Yoni Ortio thrown in there, too.
Little Yoni Ortio at the start of the season. They were able to maintain that nobody believes in us sort of mindset throughout the season, and it was true. And where this current Flames team could be different is there's enough been there and done that. Like if we go back to 14-15, I want to say Yuri Hudler might have been the only Stanley Cup winner on that roster. I'd have to take a closer look at that roster, but there was not a ton of guys who'd sort of been there. Like I think of the depth, and it was David Jones and Lance Boma,
Mason Raymond.
Anyways, this group has guys like Kadri and Coleman, and even though they're not cup champions, guys like Huberto and Uyghur who have been around it so long that I think they're using that underdog mentality really well, and I wonder how they can continue to manufacture and maintain that even if suddenly they find themselves 4 or 5 points up on the chase pack. Like if you put yourself in that scenario, how do you kind of continue to use the mental edge that I think you've capitalized on for long stretches of this season? I'll be really fascinated in that part.
Yeah, I'm not saying they're going to, I'm not suggesting that, oh, Flames have nothing else to, if I were to suggest that to a member of the Flames right now, they'd take a stick and whack me right in the shins and be like, no, don't say that. No, we're not there yet. Like they know that they can't lose their edge, and you know, guys like Blake Coleman and Michael Backlund and you know, guys who know the importance of the way this team is playing. You know, as Ryan Huska told us from the poker tournament on Tuesday, like they know when they haven't played their game, and very rarely does it sound like the coaching staff has to reinforce the message of the way this team needs to play. So they know they've got to keep their edge, and so by no means am I suggesting that, oh no, it's done, it's dusted, they're in, don't worry about it. It's just that they do have themselves an opportunity staring them in the face here.
Absolutely.
And that's maybe the most important thing, and almost, I almost use a word you're not supposed to use. I almost use the word irregardless, which is not a word. I almost use it, but I'm like, nope, that's not a word.
Yeah. Go with it, though. Hey, if it makes you feel good,
go with it.
No,
I don't want it. I like to speak English as best I possibly can.
Yeah. You speak English good.
I speaks good. Regardless of what Vancouver does or St. Louis does or Utah does, it's just a big opportunity that the Flames can look down the road and see the playoffs, and if they hit the right exits, they're in. And it's kind of it's almost irrelevant. Like if the Flames take care of their business and they keep on winning more than the other teams are winning, like they do control this right now. They got one more head to head against Vancouver. They're done with St. Louis, but I mean they have the ability to punch their ticket on their own and not have to cross their fingers for other things to happen, which is a situation they haven't been in two plus seasons.
Yeah. And when you go back, and I know we've talked about this on the show before, but when you go back to 14-15, one of the things after they wrapped that 8-game losing streak, like after Johnny scores the hat trick on December 22nd or 23rd in Los Angeles.
Yep.
From that point forward, it was like everything that could or needed to go right for them went right for them, right? When they needed to get a good goaltending performance, they got it. You talk about a bunch of the sort of ingredients. Okay, so you're going to get, what, 16 or 17 goals from Lance Boma? Okay,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
well, they did. Oh, you're going to get 50-some points from Dennis Wiedemann. Good freaking luck. Oh, you know what happened? He did, right? Put up a ton of points, played a ton of minutes. Chris Russell blocked everything. Like, everything went right. And I had this conversation with Rasmus Anderson a week or two ago. He wasn't on that team, but I said, when I covered the 14-15 Flames, everyone thought they'd drop off because it just, not everything could keep going right. And as Rasmus Anderson pointed out to me as we were talking about it, this current Flames team doesn't fit that mold. He said, we need to score more goals. Everyone knows we need to score more goals. Well, look, we're in a playoff spot. Mm. We have one of the worst penalty kills in the league. Well, look, we're in a playoff spot. We're not talking about a team that everything is sort of, the planets are aligning perfectly for. Not everything is going exactly the way they'd hope. And that's where I think this Flames team is so interesting, is that there's room for the surprise story of the first half to play better hockey than they have moving forward. And they're going to need to take advantage of that opportunity that you've laid out. They're absolutely going to need to, but I don't look at this as a group or a squad that's maximized their potential.
Like, I know they think they've got another level to get to. I know the coaching staff continues to say they've got another level to get to. And they're, honestly, they're going to have to get there.
Sure. Like the opposite of Lance Boma coming out of nowhere to score 16 goals in 14-15 is Andrei Kuzmenko only having 2, or Yegor Sharangovich being at 6 halfway through the season. He's up to 8 now, but we're kind of talking about the opposite.
Yep.
And so there's really some ability or some potential to maximize
that. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how things play out the final 37 games of the season. Is that right? 37?
Yeah, you got that right.
Woo! We still don't know when one of those 37 games is going to be played. They still haven't officially rescheduled that game.
I think that is official now.
Is it really?
Yeah,
Did I miss that?
It got kind of snuck onto the social media channels over the weekend, but it will be tacked on at the end of the regular season.
Oh, thank you.
I think
for
it
that.
Was announced.
I literally
Saturday
did
or Sunday,
not. I did not.
And
see
it was
that.
One of those. It just kind of started to float around on social media. Would it be April 17th? I don't have it in front of me. I think April 17th.
Seriously? Did not know that happened.
You know what? For a guy who has his finger on the pulse as much as you do, we're going to forgive it.
Well, as I told you all along, and as I broke the news right here that the Flames will have that rescheduled game on April 17th at 8:30 p.m. in Los Angeles. Will it mean anything?
Be interesting, right?
That is super fascinating.
Will it be air wranglers? Are you resting, guys?
Is it Air Ontario?
Get in. What's it look like?
What about the Kings? Like, is it the Ontario Reign? Are they punched in? The Flames
right.
need a win?
Yeah.
Is it completely meaningless on both sides?
Really. Either way, let's make sure we start at 8:30.
Yeah, I'm super, super sick they're going to do that at 8:30. Love that.
Regardless of what, or as you'd say, irregardless of
I've
what,
never, I've never said it in a sentence.
Regardless of what game ever. 82 ultimately means, I think we can confirm that you'll be taking calls till 1 a.m.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
You won't even start until after midnight. So
yeah.
Good times. Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg, we're underway this hour on Flames Talk, and we're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio on this Wednesday. Your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now for a Wednesday edition of your Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg, and now the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. And gents, the news of the day in Flamesland, Walker Duehr claimed off waivers. He's now a member of the San Jose Sharks. The Flames put him on waivers Tuesday afternoon, and then on this Wednesday at noon, we found out claimed by the San Jose Sharks. Gents, our reaction to that and kind of the implications of Walker Duehr moving on.
Well, as we talked about yesterday, I wasn't surprised to see him put on waivers, but I was surprised to see him claimed, quite frankly, because of the one-way contract that he's on. Now, it's an expiring contract, so it's not like the Sharks are locked in long-term with Walker Duehr if they don't want to be, and he's not making a ton of money, and they've got a lot of cap space and are a rebuilding team that I think is in a position to roll the dice on a guy, and maybe a change of scenery brings him back to where he was a couple of years ago when he earned that two-year contract from the Flames. But organizationally, obviously at the NHL level, the Flames need to add some right shots. They now have two right shot forwards on the roster, Matt Coronato and Andrei Kuzmenko. One's a regular, one hasn't been, at least not this season. So we've talked a lot about their need to add a right-handed centerman, but I think just to add a right-handed forward would be a need at this point in time. And, you know, even looking at the AHL level, I guess short term, I'm not that worried about them losing a guy like Walker Duehr, and you know, all the best to him with the Sharks, because they've got a guy like Adam Klapka, who I think can come up and play in a bottom six role and probably play as effectively, maybe even more effectively than Walker Duehr was this season. So I'm a little bit worried about the lack of right shots at the professional level in the organization right now, but hopefully there aren't more injuries to guys who hold the stick that way and it doesn't become a bigger concern, but not a lot of depth at that position right now.
I am a right-handed shot, if anyone was wondering.
As am I.
I don't have great fitness.
Might be a PTO in your future.
Yeah, not great fitness testing results, if we're being honest, and not awesome in the room, but other than that, I do have a right-handed shot.
If you need a muffin that can sometimes get on net, I got you.
I wasn't sure what to expect. I was sitting talking to my post-media colleague, Danny Austin, about whether Walker Duehr might be claimed. You understand what the appeal is. There's a good blend of size and speed. Like, he moves really well for his size. Unfortunately, he hasn't sort of consistently been willing or been able to play that rugged style that coaches see his skill set and envision. And so I'm not surprised that the appeal's there, and I do wish him all the best in San Jose. It's a good thing for the Flames organization when other teams want your scraps, right? It's a good sign for a team when you don't have use for a guy on your NHL roster and other teams see some value there. The biggest implication that I wonder about, guys, is just what it does to sort of the depth of the organization. Like, suddenly got Brad Pascal and Joe Cirella probably let fly a few curse words when they saw the news today, because the Calgary Wranglers could not afford to lose another forward. That, I suppose, hasn't technically happened yet, but they'll lose a forward now to a call-up tomorrow. I think we all anticipate it'll probably be Dryden Hunt, although Adam Klapka and William Stromgren might be in that mix as well. But they're going to lose a forward tomorrow to a call-up, and they're not getting one back. And you're talking about a team that's already signing guys to PTOs to fill out its four forward lines. Well, the Wranglers' fourth line probably doesn't matter much to the average fan. I think what you lose every time you lose a guy in the system is some of that internal competition that's been so successful for this team. You don't want to, and I think, Willsy, it was just yesterday you said there's been points in this organization where they needed a call up, and you kind of looked at the list and thought, I guess that guy, but it's not like there were guys banging down the door, hey, you got to call me up. And now with Jacob Pelche in the NHL and with Rory Karens off to a point per game start, and you know, with guys who aren't going to be bumped back because you've got other guys on long-term injuries, I just think that organizational depth took a real hit today, and that part of it hurts.
Yeah, I mean, you think of they've lost a lot of depth this year, and starting with Schwint on waivers, and then you lose two guys that, you know, I don't really know if we actually have any idea what Anthony Mantha was as a member of the Flames, because it was such a short-lived amount of time, and Kirkland wasn't that much longer, but I think we had a really good idea of what Justin Kirkland was as a member of the Flames. He really helped their fourth line. Now you lose Dewar, and I don't think Dewar was making the same type of impact as the first those other two guys. But I mean, that's four players that you've lost and will not be getting back this season. And for a team that I don't know if we looked at and said they had incredible depth, that starts to test you. And the fact that it's a right shot guy, I think is slightly significant. But the thing that I think is the most frustrating is that you just lose another option. And you lose an option with the Wranglers because he was a point per game guy down there before he came up. He was one of their most important players. And I know that for some, and I kind of get it, like for some, the Wranglers, they're kind of like, yeah, they're out of sight, out of mind. Like, whatever they do, they're only here for call-ups. But that's not what they are. Like, the Flames and many other teams believe, and Willsy, you know this as well as anybody, that, you know, winning and being a successful American League franchise is a big part of developing young players. And so now you've lost a really important part of that, and an important veteran, and a guy who has almost 100 NHL games under his belt. And I just, it's not an ideal situation. It was not, I don't think the Flames were expecting it. I certainly wasn't expecting it. I wish him all the best. I think he'll get a great opportunity to play some minutes in San Jose. And I think it's a really neat opportunity for him. So I wish him all the best, and we'll see what a change of scenery does for him. And if they can, you know, kind of bring out that style that he needs to play on a more regular basis, then it could be huge for him. I know on the surface it's kind of like, well, they lost Walker Dewar and they lose a one-way contract. But, you know, that was an effective depth player for you. And for a team that's had their depth supremely tested this year, that's probably not one that you needed to have.
Well, Pat, I think you were alluding to the 13 years that I spent in the American Hockey League because of my lack of God-given ability. But during my time in that...
playing the game.
Yeah, iffy. during my time in that league, you know, I saw a lot of guys who were really good top six players in the AHL. And when the NHL needed a bottom six guy, you know, naturally you thought, well, you know, he's been our best player, call him up. Quite often it worked, quite often it didn't work, because some guys can go from being a top six guy in the AHL to being a bottom six guy in the NHL. Some guys can make that work. Other guys can't, whether it be the lack of minutes, the different roles and responsibilities. And for whatever reason, Walker Dewar, the last two seasons, hasn't consistently been able to make that work. But another thing that I've learned over the years is that teams always think they can fix players. You know, you see the raw skill set that Walker Dewar has. And if you're the Sharks, a rebuilding team with all of this cap space, and, you know, you've got spots up for grabs, why not roll the dice and see if you can fix Walker Dewar and turn him into a guy who plays more consistently in whatever role you're going to give him at the NHL level. So looking at the situation, I think one of the things that has really put the Flames where they are, and that's in a playoff spot almost 50 games into the season, is all of the internal competition in the organization this season. And when I say that, I mean internal competition at the NHL and AHL levels. You know, to just be on the Flames, the internal competition that they've had for that, the internal competition to play in the top nine, the internal competition to be on the fourth line instead of the extra forward, the internal competition to be the sixth defenseman instead of one of the two healthy scratches. So I really think that, you know, with every guy you lose, you're losing a little bit of that internal competition, which may or may not affect the Flames because they're in a good spot. And you know, I think they've built something pretty strong here with the culture they've got going and the belief and the confidence and all of those intangibles. But, you know, you lose another forward. And for me, and this is in hindsight, and hindsight's 2020, and I'm not being critical in any way, shape, or form of Craig Conroy or Ryan Husko or anybody else. But for me, losing Walker Duehr isn't as big a deal, again, in hindsight, as losing Cole Schwind. Because don't you think that having a right-handed centerman to play in your fourth line and potentially take face-offs in the penalty kill would be a good option to have right now?
No, absolutely it would be.
But that's hindsight.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Okay, it's our Daily Flames Roundtable. If you're just joining us and listening live, Flames do lose Walker Duehr on waivers on this Wednesday. He's been claimed by the San Jose Sharks. Daily Flames Roundtable, Derek Wills, Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. Guys, Wes and I touched on this a little bit in the first half, but not a ton because we knew we were going to kick it around on this segment, Willsy. And, you know, I've heard you made mention of this this year when talking about the Vancouver Canucks. You know, it was a couple of years ago when I think we made mention about how this was happening with the Flames in that final year under Daryl Sutter. Like, every year in this league, there's one or two teams that you can just put under the category. It's just not their year. Like, for injuries and bounces going against them and too many players having down years, like everything kind of conspires and it's just not their year despite the fact that expectations were higher. How much is that what Vancouver is trending towards more than halfway through the season?
Yeah, it certainly looks that way, doesn't it? And you travel back in time to my first season, 2014-2015, and you know, that wasn't the most talented Flames team, but they just found ways to win. And the longer that went on, the more they started to believe, the more everybody started to believe that maybe this is their season. You know, maybe they're going to shock the hockey world and actually make the Stanley Cup playoffs. And they did. And then they won a round. This Canucks team, it's way more talented than that Flames team was, with all due respect to that, you know, 14-15 group, which was so much fun to cover and, you know, won a playoff series, which isn't easy to do. But this Canucks team, they've got at least one world-class player in Quinn Hughes, who is one of the top three defensemen on the planet right now, in my opinion. And then they've got some great players, at least when they're right. JT Miller, Elias Pettersson, Thatcher Demko when he's healthy. Like, this is a team that should not be even fighting for a playoff spot. But they are. And right now they're on the outside looking in. So, yeah, it does feel to this point like it is one of those years, but that can change pretty quickly. Again, they're only 1 point out of a playoff spot. I know they've played one more game than the Flames, but I'm not sure we're quite at the point where we can start looking at one game in hand as being a big deal, especially when you've got a head-to-head coming up. So this is a Canucks team that I think could turn it around. I do wonder if they're able to put this whole JT Miller, Elias Pettersson drama to bed by trading one or both of those guys, depending on what return they get. And I don't think it's going to be a futures deal. You know, maybe that will be the precipice for them to get things back on the rails. But, you know, last night is a perfect example. You know, teams that are destined to go to the playoffs and do good things, more often than not, tend to find ways to win, as opposed to doing what the Canucks did again last night, finding ways to lose. You know, you got a 2-1 lead going into the third period of against a talented Sabres team, but a Sabres team that sits at the bottom of their division, and you blow it. You give up two third-period goals, and you lose 3-2, and don't even get a point out of that game. So, yeah, there have been a lot of those indications that it could be one of those seasons for the Canucks, but for me, I'm not ready to write them off simply because I think really highly of their head coach, Rick Tocchet. I think they've got a ton of talent. I think they have players who can take games over and kind of put the team on their back and help them win almost single-handedly. So I think it's too soon to write the Canucks off. But if they don't put this whole Miller-Pettersson drama to bed sometime soon and put that behind them, then maybe it is going to be one of those years for the Canucks, which would be you know, a complete shocker for me. For me, the two most surprising, in a disappointing way, teams in the league this season have been the Rangers and the Canucks, because the Rangers won the President's Trophy. I thought they could win the Stanley Cup this year. They've been awful, even though they've been better of late. The Canucks won the division. I thought they could do it again, and they're on the outside looking in.
Willsey, you just hit on sort of the biggest question mark for me, or the biggest thing that's going to determine if this will be one of those years for the Canucks, and that's how they settle the JT Miller and Elias Pettersson drama. And the only hesitation that I would have in saying, yeah, it's just going to be one of those write-off years for the Canucks, is they have, when they're ready, and I think they've got to be close to ready to do it, they have a major trade chip to play. And I think that could be the sort of thing, and not just because of the behind the scenes drama, whatever it is that's playing out between those two star players, but I just think making a trade of that magnitude really has the potential to salvage a season. Now, people who have been hanging around Calgary a long time remember when trading Dion Phaneuf was going to salvage the season for a group of Flames that was drastically underperforming, and it did the opposite. It certainly didn't work in that regard. I just wonder, because of the constant speculation and the constant drama and the soap opera that the JT Miller situation has become in Vancouver, when you are ready, or when the offers you think are good enough to play that trade chip, I do think it could really change things on the West Coast.
You know, guys, there's definitely the drama and the outside noise and all that type of stuff, which, you know, players and coaches are admitting starting to take a toll in Vancouver. So there's that. On top of that, you've got, what are they going to move Brock Besser? Like, what if they decide that, you know what, we're on the bubble, there's no point in not trading Brock Besser and getting something back for him? The problem is, it feels like trading JT Miller, it feels like if they were decide to trade Elias Pettersson instead, or if they trade Brock Besser, it feels like on none of those occasions are you winning the trade right then. And so I don't know if they get better by doing that. And you factor on top of that, Lankinen's play has dropped a little bit because I think he's been overworked a little, and Thatcher Demko has not been good. And so that's why I say, like, there's all these factors. Elias Pettersson's numbers are down. He's not the 90 to 100 point guy this year that he was the last 2 years. So you've got that. You've got Thatcher Demko, who was a Vezina Trophy finalist last year, and he's at 873 in 11 starts, and he's missed a good chunk of the season. So you have that injury side of things. They played without Roenick for a good chunk of time. Now you've got this drama coming into it. Like, it just feels like there's so many different things that are impacting the Canucks. And that's why I wonder, like, the JT Elias stuff is the most salacious and the most, that's what you refresh Twitter to see. And that's why you go and just type in hashtag Canucks and see what comes up. Like, that's the entertaining stuff. But when you actually start to take a look at the way this season has gone for Vancouver, so many things have worked against him. That's why I am starting to wonder if this is just one of those years where maybe, Willsey, it's not meant to be.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm glad it's another team for a change. And I give the Flames organization from top to bottom a lot of credit. There was so much drama for such a long time, including last season with all those pending UFAs. It feels like the biggest drama this season is, you know, why is Kevin Rooney still in the lineup, right? And that's not a shot at Kevin Rooney, but as we talked about yesterday, you put out the lines and pairings, Pat, and your mentions blow up with Rooney stuff, which I don't think is fair to him, but that's a topic for another day. But the Canucks are just surrounded with drama right now. And to your point, generally speaking, and this isn't, 100% of the time, but I would say it's the rule, and there are exceptions to the rule. When you trade the best player, you're probably at least short-term going to lose that trade. So if you trade JT Miller, chances are you're trading him to a Stanley Cup contender. And they're not going to subtract players off of their roster to get JT Miller that they think makes them a worse hockey team. So does that make the Canucks a better hockey team short term? Probably not. Now, is it addition by subtraction in some way, shape, or form? Maybe, but I mean, you've also got to replace the points that JT Miller puts up and the role, the really important one that he plays on that team. He's a tough guy to play against. So it's going to be fascinating to watch this whole thing play out. But hey, if you're a Flames fan, you're probably loving all the drama in Canucks Nation right now, because it's, let's be honest, one of the reasons why you're sitting in the Stanley Cup playoff spot right now.
And we will do this again on Thursday, Wilsey, when we actually have a game to get ready for, because the Flames are finally back in action Thursday night against the Buffalo Sabres. For now, rest up. We will talk to you then.
Looking forward to it, guys. We'll see you tomorrow.
He is Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk. Thanks to Cam Hughes. Thanks to Shan Vergie, our outstanding producers. And Wes Gilbertson's on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport.